Alice in Wonderland. I'm not crazy. My reality is just different from yours. After being arrested and charged with the murder of her husband, Lola Adams was jailed. The first person to visit her was a representative from the temple. In Florida, all jailhouse visits are recorded.
I really think the greatest thing you can be doing right now is meditating.
I know.
Have you been meditating?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's so scary in here and lonely, and I don't know.
We're doing everything we can to get you out, okay? We're consulting lawyers, and Ty is booking a flight out to be here personally.
Ty's coming?
Yes, he will be flying out.
Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God.
You need to stay strong, Lola, okay? Do you hear me? You need to channel all this fear into your meditation.
I am.
Are you? Because I'm not seeing someone spiritually composed.
I know.
Then why aren't you correcting it?
I can't be composed.
You can do anything if you are meditating strongly and frequently enough. You will be enough. You will have enough. But if you falter in your practice, you know you're going to fail.
I just can't stop thinking about Kyle.
I am not seeing someone spiritually composed.
Lucille Bibb, Lola's mother.
I hadn't seen Lola in 6 years. I wasn't invited to her wedding. After she joined her temple, she cut me out of her life.
That must have been very painful for you.
Extremely. She's my only child.
How did you reconnect with Lola?
A friend wrote to me. She'd seen something on Facebook about Lola's arrest. What happened to her? So I contacted the jail and went through the process of arranging visitation.
I was afraid to see her at first. She was an ignorant force, and I was prohibited from seeing her. But by the time I heard she wanted to visit, I'd been in jail 10 days, and I was feeling very confused. And suddenly, there was nothing in the world I wanted more than to see my mom.
She did not look like her old self. She was gaunt. She was timid. And her voice was deeper and her eyes were sunken. I don't even think I would have recognized her if I saw her on the street.
Lucille, were you concerned about Lola's health?
Yes.
Did you know anything about the organization, TCS, when you went to visit Lola in jail?
I started learning about TCS after my daughter left my life. So I already knew, or thought I knew, how it was dangerous, but I never could have expected this to happen.
Did you bring anything with you to the jail?
Yes, I brought literature about TCS, articles and blog printouts from ex-members. I was allowed to bring Lola reading material, so that's what I chose. I didn't tell her what they were when I brought them.
Why not?
I didn't want to make her feel attacked or overwhelmed. I just gave them to her.
Due to the content of Lola's confession, the state ordered she undergo a psych eval.
I interviewed Lola Adams over the course of 2 days at the Gainesville Police Department. I reviewed the transcript of her police interview prior to meeting with her.
What conclusions, if any, did you draw from that?
I didn't draw conclusions. She was seemingly in shock at the time of the interview. Nevertheless, I suspected Lola might suffer from a delusional disorder of some type.
Why did you suspect this?
Well, because of the transcript. Lola was seemingly under the impression that there was a worldwide collection of people keeping the world safe through their meditations. Assertions like those made me consider a delusional disorder possible.
Did you request any records prior to meeting with and evaluating Ms. Adams?
Yes, I requested her medical and school records.
And did you glean anything from those?
Well, I ruled out schizophrenia, and I saw no abnormal psychiatric history to speak of, so it was important for me to see her personally.
What were your observations during the 2 days you evaluated her?
The woman I saw was not like the woman I observed in the police interview video. Although she was likely in shock, the woman on the video was measured in her responses, and she exhibited psychiatric characteristics commensurate with someone under a delusion. That was not the experience I had meeting Lola personally.
How was that experience different?
I would call it a much more human presentation. She was less measured, less poised, she spoke with less calculation and gravity. Instead, I found her to be not only in touch with her emotions, but a deeply emotional person. She also freely discussed her feelings and thoughts with me. She was unguarded, polite, and her answers to my questions were consistent.
Did you talk about TCS?
Oh yes, and she freely shared the temple's belief system with me. But I have to say, I found her explanation of their beliefs during my examination more compelling than I did on her interview tape.
What do you mean?
When we were discussing the tapestry, she used the word metaphor. The term tapestry is not an inappropriate metaphor to use for the concept of universal meditative oneness. Oneness is a principle I've heard exhorted over the last decades by some esteemed colleagues who practice meditation. So I felt she was grounded when she was explaining this concept to me.
Was there anything else that seemed at odds with Lola's conduct in her police interview?
Yes, her physical composure had changed. She walked, sat, and spoke very differently. In the video, she was very rigid and sat with her feet on her knees up in the chair and her hands clasped in her lap. She'd intermittently bow her head to the police interviewer. When I examined Lola, she exhibited very few of those physical habits. She sat back in her chair with a relaxed posture, rested her hands by her sides, and never bowed.
Was that significant?
Not in itself. It's important to note she was possibly in shock during the police interview, so her behaviors cannot be accurately measured against another point in time.
Did you and she talk about the shooting of her husband?
Yes.
How did she seem?
Well, deeply remorseful, emotional. There were many tears shed. This was also a stark departure from her police statement.
Why was it important for you to continue noting the difference between her psyche eval and her police statement?
Because once I ruled out a delusional disorder, which I did, it was incumbent upon me to determine if her behavior on camera following the shooting was the result of shock or something else.
So in total, what criteria did you weigh in your psychiatric assessment of Lola Adams?
Norm-referenced psychological tests, informal tests and surveys, interview information, school and medical records, medical evaluation, and observational data.
And what did you determine?
That Lola Adams was both sane and competent to stand trial. I did assess she was traumatized, but that's not uncommon for a first-time perpetrator of a violent crime, nor does it equate to psychiatric impairment.
Jailhouse video with Lola's mother, Lucille Bibb.
It doesn't make sense, Mom. I'll read something and get frantic, and then I think I'm going crazy. I don't know what's real.
I'm real, baby. I'm here. I'll be here every day. It's gonna be okay.
With the help of attorney Sage Watkins, Lola's mother arranged for her to have a psychiatric appointment with cult expert Stella Laughlin.
When I met Lola, she'd been in jail 27 days and she'd already begun her deprogramming.
Because of the literature she'd read?
Access to that information, yes, as well as being away from the group. It's the group's constant reinforcement of their beliefs that strengthen and maintain the cult identity. Once that reinforcement is removed, it becomes much easier for an outsider to reach someone in a destructive cult, to draw out their real identity.
And how many occasions did you meet with Lola personally?
14 times.
How many times have you spoken by phone?
Possibly 50 times.
And have you, an expert in cult deprogramming, made a determination about Lola's psychological state?
Yes. Lola was undoubtedly a member of a destructive cult and a victim of mind control. She demonstrated all the characteristics of someone being deprogrammed.
What would you say to someone who noted differences between Lola's behavior before and after her deprogramming?
That's fully to be expected. A cult identity will look at you, speak to you, and move in a way individual to that identity. An authentic identity would present itself as a new person. It can be confusing for an untrained evaluator to recognize, but these are universal signs.
Ms. Laughlin, how many years have you been practicing cult deprogramming?
9 years.
And are you typically found and contracted by families of concerned cult members?
Yes.
They hire you to deprogram them?
That's correct.
And in those 9 years, how many clients have you serviced?
54.
Okay. And in those 54 people, have you ever come across someone you didn't consider to be in a destructive cult?
What do you mean?
I mean, have you ever met someone and said, "You're not in a cult. You're not under mind control. I'm not needed here."
No, typically people only contact me
when... All I needed was a no. 54 people. 54 people under mind control. 0 people not under mind control. Is that your testimony? A yes or no is fine.
Yes.
Great. I know it's been a long week, but I have one last question. Are you being paid by the defense to testify in this trial?
Yes.
2 experts, 2 assessments. Did the psych evaluator miss the signs of a mind-controlled woman in the grips of deprogramming? Or did the cult expert see what she was used to and wanted to see? If you're enjoying the story of Lola Adams, I want to tell you about another immersive storytelling podcast I think you're going to get into. It's called Family Ghosts, and every episode it explores a family mystery that's plagued and haunted its members. These are real stories, and the creators of Family Ghosts invite you, the listener, directly into their investigations. They find the truth hiding in the corners where family legends reside, and confront the characters in those stories who shape their family's legacies. Behind every legend, long-held secret, and unanswered question are real people with real emotions and important questions. Join host Sam Dingman as he investigates the people and incidents that change a family's trajectory forever. Season 2 launches on May 15th. If you're into this story about cults, you'll like the episode that explores the ghosts inside the Love Israel family cult. Family Ghosts goes on to investigate the secret life within a newly discovered stack of love letters, a container of missing Chinese food that's haunted a family for 25 years, and more. Subscribe to Family Ghosts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you get your podcasts. And take a listen to Season 1. You'll understand why they say every house is haunted.
This one's a tense one. You know, you guys, just so that I'm really clear, because I'm a bit confused when they were talking about the witnesses and there's a paid witness. I wasn't aware that witnesses here, I thought that in the UK, so obviously I've been here like 5 years, I didn't know that witnesses could be paid.
That wasn't on your American citizen test?
Mm-hmm. No, I kind of missed that question.
It's okay. It wasn't on there. Yeah. I've been stating that all along and I've been trying to bring that home, but maybe I wasn't clear when I kept saying that Stella was testifying on behalf of the defense. The defense pays expert witnesses.
I didn't know that it was a paid, that there's an incentive. It's really shocking. I'm really confused.
So money as a motive is something that you would consider, because I want to bring up another thing, but money does influence you?
It influences everybody. Especially influences Ty Byman, in my opinion.
We'll talk about the experts, but just some little nugget that I want to drop off there since you're focusing on money.
Yeah.
You do realize that if Stella is found not guilty, it's entirely logical that she might get that inheritance from Kyle Adams's grandmother. I just want to throw that out there.
You mean Lola?
Lola. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Lola, if we find her not guilty, you know, it's very, very possible that she could get that inheritance because she was technically his wife. But it's great that you're influenced by money.
Wasn't that all a lie, though? Like, the whole will thing? I think that was all a lie.
No, that was not a lie.
I'm pretty sure that's why they made it up so you would come out. And then they had the intervention.
The initial inheritance.
Oh, the grandmother's will,
That brought him back.
No, the lie was that he had an inheritance and that's how they got him to come.
They both lied. The family lied to get him there.
Yeah.
And then he lied to say that that's how he was going to get her out.
No, he lied to her to say that he could get even more money.
Even more money.
That was a lie, but there was an inheritance.
There really was an inheritance. Yeah, we don't know the amount.
But they just didn't really, they actually spent that time.
Absolutely there was.
I don't think there was.
And then they spent the time doing the intervention.
Absolutely.
I mean, we could look back at the trend.
When did we hear that?
Because the reason why TCS allowed him to go back was because there was an inheritance.
But the family lied about that.
No.
Oh, so maybe you'd be influenced by money too. Would that affect your...
If I was influenced by money, I would have quit screenwriting a long time ago.
Yeah, no, same for the bar work. Yeah. It's not the best well-paid career.
But let's talk about the expert witness. So they're paid. Does that affect you at all?
It puzzles me, and...
What do you mean, puzzling?
Yeah.
I find it really discombobulating, to be honest. It's really kind of thrown me, because I always thought that witnesses... You know, I watch a lot of dramas and stuff like that on TV. And
all the real stuff.
Yeah. Like the
Shane, Jesus Christ, dude.
But, there'll be a pathology expert or a scenes of crime or a police officer all up there giving testimony. And if somebody's up there being paid for it, that really puzzles me.
I mean, they're experts. They want to be paid for their time.
Yeah.
Also,
that's what they do for a living.
That's why the prosecutor left with that question. So you got paid to do this. So someone who's getting paid is going to want to serve the side of the law, the side of the case that they're being paid by.
Well, that's never happened in American anything before.
That's the point that the prosecutor is bringing. That, well, naturally, this expert testimony is going to skew to this side because they're getting paid.
That's what's puzzling me. It's the payment creates a bias, if a police officer goes up to make a statement, they're being paid by the state, and that testimony would almost fall under their role as a police officer. Yes. So it's not paid to be a witness. It's you're a witness because it's part of your role.
But they're also working for the state, so they're working for the prosecution side.
Right.
Yeah.
So like they may be influenced.
They could be influenced as well. I mean, technically, the psychiatrist who works for the state could be influenced by the state because he wants the police officers who already corroborated with the witness to pass this, so that way the state prosecutor can also pass this and they can all look good as a giant big state. So, I mean, you could argue that it's beneficial.
There's a whole bunch of influences going on right now, guys.
Yeah.
And but, one, go ahead.
One is a psychiatrist. Stella Laughlin is an expert in deprogramming cults.
Right. Yeah,
and
totally.
So she's not a psychiatrist. She doesn't have...
Well, she still is a psychiatrist. She's just chosen to pursue a career in cults.
Oh, is she a psychiatrist?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
You believe so?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, she is a psychiatrist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Alex, what about you? What are you thinking?
I mean, I'm glad that Banks is focusing on money as a motivator here. There, in a lot of murder trials, you always do have to think of, well, who benefits. I think a lot, and
Kyle's dead, so he's not benefiting at all.
Yeah, but if we let her off, she could benefit from the inheritance.
Right,
that
and the next person that she marries, she
I
could
really
do the same thing
have
again.
I've never even thought about once that her motivation was money. And if
no,
I think her motivation was money, I think the prosecution would have brought that up.
Well, they did. They have. I mean, we're here trying to determine.
But I think if money was as a motivator to kill, that would have been a huge key point throughout the entire case. Like, it would have been something they brought up every day.
So it sounds like what you're saying is it's not that big of a deal.
I just don't see money as a motivator here.
Well, she surrenders all her money to the TCS.
Yeah, she gives all her money to TCS anyway, so.
She doesn't.
So it sounds like she could get reprogrammed by TCS and then give all that money that she's getting from
if she has been deprogrammed. And I know Campbell has suspicions as to whether or not she has been deprogrammed. Yes, I know I have some suspicions as to whether or not she's been deprogrammed.
Well, she's been programmed.
Whether she's been deprogrammed or not, I mean, I actually really don't think the testimonies between psychiatrist one and psychiatrist two, if we just want to keep it simple, were that different. I mean, I know the state's psychiatrist was not, was not a cult expert, but he did notice a very big difference in Lola's behavior before her, when she was programmed, and then noticed a huge difference in her behavior after she was deprogrammed, which to me stood out. And he never really said that mind control wasn't possible. He never said that she wasn't under the influence of mind control. He just narrowed out that she wasn't delusional, which we already know, and she would have done an insanity plea. But he noticed huge changes.
Wait a minute. He didn't see her after she was totally deprogrammed. Stella.
Yeah, he did. He did a psychiatric evaluation after her deprogramming.
Well,
he said that she was sane and competent,
and then she
traumatized.
Met her in person.
Yeah.
At first.
Well, he watched the police video.
He looked the video the day she was brought in.
Yeah, and she was a completely different person.
But that was shortly after when he met her in person.
Well, he met her after she was deprogrammed.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
He met her.
What actually happened, guys?
I got the impression that it was after deprogramming because he said, Lola was both sane and competent to stand trial.
Right.
Yeah. Meaning he implied there was a big shift in what he saw in the video.
So do we all agree that was it before they met before or they met after?
They met after, it's fact.
She may have been in the process of being deprogrammed. She may have met with
If we need
mother.
To bring in the bailiff for reinsurance,
yes,
we can.
Yes, but typically a state psychiatrist would meet with somebody in person shortly after they were brought in. I think it was probably, my feeling, it was during the first week that she was in prison.
When Alex, Stella met her 27 days after, right? She'd been away from...
That's the second one.
Yeah.
Alex, you look contemplative. What's going on?
No, I'm in agreement with Campbell, is that my impression is that this happened pretty... 2 days after she was brought into...
So he saw the physical difference pretty soon, straight on.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. What else?
Yeah, and I will say that the psychiatrist only watched the video and then met with her once. So he's making an evaluation based on
Campbell, I think this is really important for us to clarify.
Okay.
There's two things that I want to clarify because you brought up a question to Shane about whether or not, you know, the will was fake. Most of us agree that it wasn't, but I also want to clarify whether or not the bailiff can tell us if the when Kirk, by the way, the guy's name is Kirk. I mean, come on, Star Trek people. Kirk, prosecutor, come on.
I'm a Star Wars
whether
guy.
Whether Kirk met with her after she was deprogrammed or not. Bailiff, I'm going to step out for a second.
Alex stepped out of the room, requested transcripts from the bailiff, and reviewed the relevant testimony.
So because I think it's critical that we always get our facts right, I have gone through our transcript, you know, the one I've had here that we've been going over piece by piece, the evidence by evidence,
right.
Analyzing everything, and I have determined two facts. One is that the will, Kyle's grandmother's will, was a real will. We don't know how much the amount was.
Right. My bad.
No worries. No, don't apologize. The lie was where you got.
Right. I just thought it was all a lie. Yeah.
No. It was Kyle saying that he would get more trying to lure Lola away.
Cool.
And also that Dr. Kirk met with Lola 4 days after she was arrested.
Cool.
So
4 days.
Yeah, four days. So. As we all know, Lola's mother didn't come for 10 days thereafter, and that was when she brought in the deprogramming literature.
Right.
So I just want to make sure we get everything correct. But let's do some analysis of Kirk versus Stella. She was paid. We already talked about that. Let's just put that aside. Okay, so whether or not you feel money was a motivator, we've talked about it ad nauseum. My feelings of Kirk versus Stella, are I'm of course, as I always am, conflicted with the fact that Kirk was, it was interesting. You know, when I was on there, watching, Kirk on the stand, and there were so many times when Kirk was saying things. And I thought for some reason, like maybe Rhodes wouldn't like what was coming out of his mouth, but it seemed like Rhodes was fine with it. And it just goes to show me that at the end of the day, he found Stella to be, you know, rational and in collection of her thoughts, and approachable and listenable. And I don't know. It made me feel that, you know, Lola might not be able to be trusted.
Sounds like never told a lie before.
Okay, well, anyway, ignoring that. But, I mean, to kind of say what you, on top of what, to, I guess, rebuttal or kind of continue off of you, Alex, I actually kind of agreed. I was, like, listening to, you know, Dr. Kirk, and I was like... Yeah, he's kind of blowing the prosecutor out of the water here.
I got that too.
He's not really biting for the right team. But, you know, he saw such a drastic behavior in Lola's shift over those 4 days. You know, he was seeing his only, I guess we could say, resource to see Lola on the first day was the police video. That's the only thing he had. He didn't, you know, he couldn't meet her that day or whatever. But, you know, 4 days later, he's talking to this woman who's drastically different. Her body language, her emotions, the way she behaves, the way she carries herself, her energy, her whatever you'll have it. And, you know, it just kind of makes me beg the question, like, she's away from her cult. We've learned that the best way cults function is by constantly being able to preach their gospel. And here she is. She has 4 days. Not only is she separated from the entire world, she's separated from everybody. She's by herself in this cell. She's just killed her husband. I can't even imagine the thought process going through her head.
Fan, it looks like you disagree.
I'm thinking of past circumstances where I experienced those things, and I'm just saying it's really too bad that happens. So it's not a disagreement.
Yeah, but as a nurse, I've seen plenty of people come in that seemed delusional for some reason, whether it was drugs or whatever, some activity they'd been involved in, and then they calmed down and seemed rational.
Have you seen people who have come in calm and then completely blow up the other direction?
Well, of course, but that would be somebody that maybe has a delusional disorder. He stated that at first she was in shock, and as she was rambling about the reasons that she had killed him and the horrible
police
things that would have happened.
Police video, yeah.
He felt that she had a delusional disorder.
When he was looking at the police video, yeah,
right.
That's right.
When
yeah.
he looked
yeah.
at the police right. video, right. right. But then after he saw her 4 days later, he said he found her rational, but he also said that he didn't find the idea of meditating, creating a oneness or a tapestry, irrational.
Yeah, he said she seemed grounded.
She seemed grounded. She seemed remorseful, and he ruled out any delusional disorder.
So, Campbell, let me ask you, do you think that he found her to be under mind control?
He did not say so. He seemed to find the idea of oneness or a tapestry almost logical. He said it wasn't uncommon, and that it didn't make him feel that she was irrational or delusional, but he only spent a limited time with her. He only spent that one day with her.
What are you getting at here, Campbell?
What I'm getting at is that Stella was with her 14 times. She spoke with her by phone 50 times.
So Stella,
she got to know her more.
So it sounds like Stella had access to more information than Robert.
I think she got to know her as a person. And
Campbell, just really quick again. Just because I know it's been a long trial. We've been here for a really long time. Dr. Kirk was with her for over 2 days. He had two solid days of psychoallergy.
Right, but she's just saying compared to the 50,
of course,
60 times
one day
that,
versus
right.
2 days. But
I think his motivation was a little bit different. He was looking to find her competent to stand trial.
Right, yes. He was indifferent,
and yes. his personal feelings
That's
that he expressed were that she seemed remorseful. And that the idea of oneness, which he expressed as the tapestry, was not that unusual.
He also noted that she at that time saw the tapestry as a metaphor, which to me kind of made me think like, did she really believe that this tapestry was a real thing?
Well, the tapestry's always been a metaphor. You know,
right.
there's never been any, you know, no one has said here ever in this entire trial that there is a real tapestry. It's all metaphorical.
Right.
Go ahead, Shane.
You're fine.
It's
just
a good point.
Wanted
yeah.
to interject really quick, and I, you'll be surprised. I actually am okay if we don't discuss Stella because I do believe there is some element of bias there.
How so?
Well, I mean, we talked about money, and she spent a significant amount of time with her, and I feel like we all believe that Dr. Kirk is very indifferent and unbiased to this case, and he just wants to.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know who you trust more. I don't know what you're getting at.
Well, I'm just saying I think if we focus on the facts of Dr. Kirk, because they're a little bit more concrete, because the bias is less.
I see.
And so on top of that, I just want to say if we take a moment to pause, I feel like we're all kind of understanding the same thing here, and we're a lot of us are repeating it, and it's I think it'd be safe to acknowledge that a gentleman who is a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a excellent scientist has said that it's not that unbelievable that somebody could buy into all this stuff. And he also has said that she was deeply remorseful 4 days after he talked to her, and that she was a lot more clear about what was going on, and that, I mean, think about it. She's had 3 or 4 days to clear her head, and she's now starting to think about all this stuff and fact check herself and be like, wait, was that this? Is the tapestry even real? Is this a metaphor? Like, what are we doing?
And it sounds like buyer's remorse.
I mean, call it what you will, but I really think that even though the defense wanted to use Dr. Kirk in their advance, I really think in between the lines here, he's actually kind of in Lola's favor, just in the sense that he's basing that she is remorseful. She's had time to think about it. She was a lot more clear to think about her actions after. She could not stop talking about her husband. She was very in touch with her emotions. She was showing characteristics of a human being and not this kind of quote-unquote cult identity that we had heard about earlier and how she was acting in the police video. I think it's just a very surmountable piece of evidence, and I think that there's a lot to be said here.
Banks,
but
you look like
look
you're not...
But we could look at that as being in her favor or against her.
I was going to say the
same
thing.
Because
I just really feel like it's in her favor.
I don't...
Especially because it's coming from someone who wasn't even there to be in her favor.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally telling us that on day one she was crazy, and then 3 or 4 days later, after she's been by herself and had time to think about stuff, she was starting to come together and pull herself together and realize a lot of her issues and a lot of her delusions. And he even thought at first that maybe this woman could be psychotic and delusional. And then, because when he watched the first video, he thought she was psychotic and delusional, and everything and all of her actions said psychotic and delusional possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he met with her, he was like, no, this woman is sane. And with that being said, if he says she is sane, then that just makes me think that she reasonably believed that what she did was just. Because if she is sane, she is reasonably making sane judgments in her mind.
Well, it's not sane that she killed her husband because of the tapestry,
but,
my friend.
But she believes
that's not
it,
sane.
And that's. But he said that she was sane, and that he. And then she believes. I'm just saying.
No, I agree with
there's
you.
There's a lot to unpack here with him.
I'm
there's
conflicted.
A lot to unpack with his very short testimony.
I'm conflicted, and he did. I think seeing her for 2 days is still a limited amount of time to get to know her after she was in the cult for 6 years.
Right.
But it
I wish
almost,
he could have gone back and done it again.
His testimony could be used by either side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it could be for her or against
which,
her.
Which I think is an important point here. I do think that's a really critical point, and I think Shane hit upon that very, very well in the fact that, you know, we have somebody that's more, I mean... Stella probably should be dismissed is what I'm trying to say here. I think everything that Stella has said during this entire trial, as helpful as it's been and detailed, and let me tell you, I'm surprised how much Rhodes let Stella just talk on and on. There were a lot of times where I wanted Rhodes to say, object, say something, but it was strategic because it was a lot of it was just a bunch of bull crap.
One of the things that I noticed when we were talking about her being a paid expert witness is she's paid for each visit, and she's paid per phone call. So that's 14 visits, 7 phone calls. She made a little bundle off of this.
Yeah, expert witnesses, from what I understand, you know, I got a buddy who did a regulatory alcohol thing, and his hourly rate, he was shocked that he got it, but it was $650 an hour.
So 14 times, even if it was half of that, 14 times 300, and then say maybe $50 for...
Well, I had even invited the idea of dismissing a lot of Stella's statements and really just breaking down this for a psychiatrist, Dr. Kirk.
Yeah, I kind of
Banks, you've been pretty quiet about this.
Who may I just
ask? I kind
ask,
of agree with everything that Shane said, to be honest.
Yeah, go ahead, Campbell.
Who paid Stella?
The defense side.
So Sage Watkins...
Right.
One question I'd like to ask is
absolutely.
When Stella talks about the cult identity versus the authentic identity,
yeah.
Do you think that's almost what Robert Kirk said when he saw the police video, that was almost her cult identity, and then when he actually spoke to her face to face, that was her becoming more real?
No, I think he made it very clear when he constantly said over and over again, and by the way, I'll back this up, when he constantly said it was the result of shock, Lola herself said, I was in shock.
Yeah.
So I don't think it had to do with the cult identity versus the non-cult
identity.
It's
more an emotional response to what she'd gone through.
I mean, she just killed her husband.
Yeah, he said first, when anyone kills someone the first time.
Premeditated, it killed her husband.
It's natural to be in that level of shock.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and she just left something that she knew to believe to be true for 6 years. Having a culture shock like that. Imagine being told the thing that you believe in most is a lie.
I don't know if she was told that yet, though.
But in reality, thinking that it's like, oh my God, you're right.
I think what we do know is at that moment in time, I know we keep talking about the tapestry, but like the rug had been pulled from under her feet.
The tapestry had been pulled from underneath her
feet. Yeah, her husband had said that he wanted to leave. He'd raised questions about their whole belief system, and then she finds herself in jail after shooting him.
Well, what's obvious is that she killed her husband and nothing bad happened.
Yep.
In the world.
There was no tsunamis. There was no hurricanes. Nothing
there's always good things
happened.
And bad things
because he
that
didn't
are going
leave the
happen.
Tapestry.
No, he didn't leave though.
I mean, and I think again, we have something that we have to consider, and I don't think we've talked about this as a group. Is what happens if we convict Lola and allow this church to continue what they're doing? Because if we convict Lola, this gives a grow green ahead, collect $200 after you pass go to the church.
I disagree. This church has been lambasted and brought to hell.
But this just gives them what we're doing is exactly right, and we can continue to terrorize and separate families and destroy families and monetize on the world.
If we found them not guilty, Lola could go and rejoin this church and bring that inheritance on with her. And the church will get even more money.
Well, I don't think that's what she wants to do, and I think she's made it a pretty clear point.
I don't know if it is clear.
I like the train of thought that Shane was bringing, and that if she's found innocent, I just imagine the Ku Klux Klan can use this law. That the people who
Not what I said.
Well, no, I'm imagining that if she gets,
but those are going to be case by case situations. This is a church that we know is destructive.
Actually, to be fair, Francis said this.
I said this days
when we first started.
Yeah. Right, but that would be a case by case situation. This is a thing that we know to already be destructive, and here we have the chance to stop it.
Right.
But they're not on trial. Lola Adams is.
But we have to look at what's being done and what's happening and how they're manipulating and taking over control
that's
of her.
Not
and if they're
able
to
do
this her
to
her, guilty is not going to stop them.
They can do this to everybody else.
It's not going
to
stop them.
They can do this to, who knows? They could mind control other people and just set a whole world of people that are going out to implant bad ideas.
We know that there are over 3,000 destructive cults.
And so this could set a precedent to shut down the rest of the cults and get rid of this mindset.
Finding her not guilty provides the precedence. That's the thing that should be the most worried about is what are we creating here for the future Lola Adams to go out and kill people?
I don't think she's going to go out and kill anyone else.
I said the future Lola Adams.
Can I mention that literally I have already said this. You take any type of belief whatsoever, any belief system, and try and get it into another belief system. It's not. Think about it. American law, for example, under this statute 776.012-2. Think about this. You instill any type of belief. I reasonably believe. I can say that. I can lie. I can do whatever. I can reasonably say that. I reasonably believe that if I feel threatened by somebody who's Mormon, that I can go and they're going to destroy the world, that I'm going to go and kill every single Mormon person on the planet. Or let's say I'm Adolf Hitler. And if you don't have blonde hair or blue eyes or anything like that, I'm going to kill every single Jew on this planet because we're the superior race.
Let him talk.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
But he's right. What do you mean he's not right?
It's on a case by case.
Thank you.
A case by case of every single belief system on the planet. However, if you reasonably believe that you are changing the world and making it better, and you are in imminent danger or imminent threat from any other species or person or thing or race or belief or whatsoever, I've made this point before.
Then we'll let each of those cases stand trial.
However,
and they'll
I'm
go to trial and they'll determine them there.
From this point forward.
And they'll follow the statutes that have been set forward by the law of the United States.
Excuse me, but this statute has been in existence for a long time. It's not a new statute.
Which
we
is
are
the
looking
problem.
At this case. It's not our job.
It's not
to
a reasonable belief.
Law.
You know, Campbell, I don't know how long it's been in place. I don't have the legislative history.
But
I don't know if you do as well.
It's not our place to change the law.
That's what I've been saying
right.
as well.
And that's true.
We have a case in which we are looking at, was she influenced by the cult?
No, we're
was
not.
Her belief?
No, we're not. We're, it's whether or not she reasonably believed that she was going to suffer from imminent harm or imminent harm.
And
was
it has to
happen.
Do with everything
Which
with the cult.
Which means that it was it the cult that created that belief.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But that doesn't
so
matter.
Basically
it's the choice.
Is Ty Byman responsible, even though he is not on trial? If we say that Lola was under mind control, it was his process. You know
yes,
you
it's what, Charles Manson you know part two.
And we are not
Wait,
here to predict
this
the
is a
future.
Perfect segment for us to start talking about Ty Byman.
Next time on Deliberations.
Do they consider you a god?
And do they pledge their allegiance to you?
Please state your name for the record.
Ty Byman.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Rudy Sallow, Sherry Michaels, Mark Smeltzer, Kate Mullen-Wallace, J.P. Stanley, and Jim Donnelly. Courtroom: Katarina Tana, Ramondo Isom, Cooper Hardin, Cindy Lopez, Anne Gundry, and John Andrews. On Friday's Jury Break, we're speaking to Rachel Bernstein, therapist and creator of the show Indoctrination, covering cults, manipulators, and protecting yourself from systems of control. See you then.